So, those of you who are logged into WebEx, can you see the presentation? Is that showing up in your WebEx window? Just want to make sure.
Yes.
Okay, great. So, just an overview again of what we're going to go over in talking about transparency today. A little introduction from me talking about what we mean by transparency. I'm going to talk very briefly about the different tools that we make available to facilitate some degree of transparency through the JCP website. And then Doug Lee is going to talk a bit about his experience of transparency and how that worked for him with 166. And Mihir will talk about transparency for 289, the tools that they've used. And then we can open it up to broader questions. Though for myself, questions are welcome as I'm talking. And then we'll have some time at the end for open discussion if there are other issues that you spec leads want to discuss amongst yourselves. So, transparency, we've been talking about transparency quite a bit. Most, if not all of you, will have seen the transparency questionnaire that we sent out a month or so ago, and many of you have responded to that. Thank you. We'll be publishing the results of that in the next month or so once we've collated it to show what different people are doing and the sense of how transparent JSRs are overall. So, when we talk about transparency, the word means the ability to see through, right? Light to pass through it. So, by that we mean openness, how clear or visible the activity going on in the JSR is. And so, when we're talking about transparency, it's how clear what's happening in the expert group and the JSR is to the people outside of the expert group. That includes such things as what the schedule is, what's happening between stages of a JSR. So questions that we get quite often, and you probably get quite often, each of you as spec leads, when you post a draft and there isn't when there isn't visibility into what's happening with the JSR, there are often questions. It's been months since you produced this last update to on the website. What's going on? It also has to do with how the expert group interacts with one another and how they incorporate feedback that they get from the community. And it's also what methods the spec lead and expert group, if the expert group has such communication, communicates to the outside world, so to speak. So, there are a number of ways in which people have provided some transparency into the operation of their JSRs. Here are a few. This is by no means exhaustive, but people have had public mailing lists. This is not necessarily, although it could be, the entirety of expert group communication. Although for that to happen, the expert group has to agree to that unanimously that they're going to communicate openly. Usually, or maybe not usually, but often, it's a mailing list that the public can post to and communicate with the expert group or spec lead with in parallel to the expert group private communications. It's posting summaries of the meetings that the expert group has to show what things are being discussed, what decisions are being made, give a sense of what activity is happening within the expert group. Some spec leads have blogs where they talk about the progress of the JSR. Several JSRs use collaborative sites so that people can contribute and see interim drafts, iterative drafts of the specification, as well as potentially the reference implementation in TCK. And then there are such things as wikis and various issue trackers where people can file bugs, maybe bug is too strong a word, but things that they're really interested in seeing, feature requests and the like. So all of those things are great, and there are many others besides, but I would encourage each of you that if you have such things, please try to make a link to them available on the jcp.org site under your control, because often that's where people go first to find out about the JSR, and having a wiki and a public mailing list and all these things is great, but it's effectively useless if there isn't information about it on the JCP JSR page. So, how do you make it available on the JSR page? Well, there are three ways that you can communicate to the outside world via the JCP website. And the first is the community update page. You'll see down at the bottom of this little screen capture, and I apologize for the resolution, is a link to the community update page. This is an example of a JSR page. Under the listing of expert group, there is a link to the EG private page, and under that is a community update page. And people go there to find out information about the JSR. And this is an example of what a community update page looks like. And going into it as a spec lead, you have this edit this page link right there in the middle, and that will bring up a text editor where you can enter flat text or HTML to update this page. So in addition to the community update page, we have the observer aliases. These are public aliases that you administer as a spec lead. When you're set up as a spec lead, you are given administrative rights to the JSR number observers alias. And so you can control the subscribers, and you can use it for sending out announcements or having discussions with the interested members of the community who request to be added, or people that you add yourself because you know that they're interested. Now, there is a link, instructions on the community update page for people who are visiting that page to request being added to the observer's alias. So some of you may have received such requests already. More power to you if you have. So there is a overview of how to administer the alias, also linked from the community update page. And one of the talks that I gave earlier this year goes into more detail about both the community update page and the observer aliases. That's available from the multimedia page on jcp.org. Finally, you can add updates to your JSRs. So if you update the schedule, or there's a change in the description of the JSR, or any of the sections of the proposal that you initially submitted and was voted on by the executive committee, you can post those updates at the moment, we don't have a direct way for you to make those edits to the page. So making edits is a matter of sending the text that you'd like added to the page to the PMO via the admin@jcp.org alias. There are any questions? If not, then I will turn it over to Doug.
Okay, I thought I'd...
Doug, I'm sorry. Let me interrupt for a moment. Do you need me to turn the desktop over to you?
No, it'll just waste time for no
okay.
reason.
All right.
I thought I'd just talk about what the underlying idea for transparency is. For the background, I'm not only the spec lead for 166, but I've been on the JCP Executive Committee for way too long now, and see the Executive Committee and the JCP process and how it interacts with the JSR level stuff. And I want to say a few things about that in a few minutes. But I think the reason for transparency is first to get rid of this once well-deserved reputation that JCP sort of is this mysterious cabal that does things that make no sense, which truly was true at one point. And one of the reasons that's bad is not just because people think it's a mysterious cabal, it's because it is a terrible way to try to grow communities. And what we do with JSR is grow communities. And a good JSR is a transparent JSR, is one that not only develops some APIs and standardizes across the specs, but builds a base community for propelling that into the indefinite future. We are the poster boys for that. We have done that too well. We basically proposed some JSR, a JSR for concurrency enhancement in Java, and basically now own that territory, and nobody will take it back from us because we immodestly do it too well. So even though we were a one-shot JSR like most of them, we are very serious about trying to be stewards of concurrency features of the language, because if not us, who? It might as well be us. And it actually took a good long while for that to happen, but it happened because of transparency, because of us taking risks to put out ideas in non-final form. Most of what we did predates some of the improved support of at jcp.org. So we have our own site and our own mailman run mailing list and our own CVS repository, and all of those started out. We had 7 members of the expert group and initially a couple of dozen external subscribers to our public list, and we've always worked as put stuff out in the public list, but keep an internal list around so that you're not airing dirty laundry in public, which is not usually dirty laundry. It's that 2 people disagree about some decision, and you'd rather not spread that so that 800 people are disagreeing about that decision. You just want to talk to a few people and resolve it. That rarely actually happens. We had many thousands of postings on the public 166 concurrency interest list at this point. I think we're over 6,000, and 1,000 internal, to show the approximate spread there. But that list started off at a couple of dozen, and now it's still manageable. We have about 800 people on the concurrency mailing list. I know one of you listening are, and as it turns out to be the place where people bring up RFEs, they complain about things, bugs but are things they don't like, and they continue to be discussed, and this is now, what, 5 years after the initial JSR. So your big reward for doing things well is no one lets you stop. Hopefully you like that. If you don't, then you have to think about a successor plan about what to do once your JSR completely finishes. Those are really my main points, that transparency is there for a reason. The reason is to build communities, and the way you build communities is by taking a little bit of a risk, not just sitting around in a little extra group and discussing things, but exposing your ideas, putting out source repositories, saying, well, here's something, please try it out, let us know what you think, and by the way, it's all subject to change. And you find that there are people who tolerate that, people who need what you're doing, and if you have a JSR, hopefully people need what you're doing, or else you wouldn't be doing it. There will be people trying to help you. I know that within Sun, there are JSRs that are increasingly opening up in this sort of way. Alan, who's on this call, I hope, with 203, is a similar story with a more narrow focus, so it's a little bit harder to judge. And John Rose, for sure, taking over the Invoke dynamic, has built a very strong community that is big enough now to hold its own workshop going on as I speak. I think those are big success stories, and they only happen if you're brave enough to expose all your ideas to the world and live with the fact that every once in a while there'll be a crazy person who doesn't like you or some disruption. Those all go away. All the reasons people can think of for not doing it, I think they're all bad. Yes, you get crazy. Yes, every once in a while things devolve into totally crazy, stupid discussions that you hope will go away. They always go away. That's my little rant on transparency and community building. I'd love to hear questions or comments or whatever.
So, Doug, this is Ed Burns from JSF. I have a question regarding email and threads and archives.
Uh-huh.
Do you ever have any trouble rediscovering a thread that may be distributed across the private and the public list? How do you manage when a topic needs to span lists?
We that does show up from time to time, and no, I don't have a solution. I and especially Joe Balbier, who's on the expert group, have been guilty every once in a while of sending the wrong thing to the wrong list or the right thing to the wrong list. And okay, it's embarrassing, but you live.
Okay. Harold, I have another question. Are you going to give us any update on the status of the Jive forums?
We are figuring that out.
Okay.
So we are working on the revision of jcp.org, and one of the things that we had targeted to include in the next major revision was forum functionality. And we had been using Jive software as part of that, and the company has announced that it is ending any support EOLing that software. So
didn't know that.
That's the question that Ed's talking about. So it's up in the air right now, but we're working on it, and as we figure out what we're going to do, several of you will find out maybe a little sooner than others, because I'm going to be contacting Spec Leads to help us test the site before we launch it. But that's kind of getting off the topic. Any other questions for Doug or for me about transparency? If not, then I will turn it over to Mihir. And Mihir, you do want to have the desktop, yes?
Yes, that's right, Harold.
Okay. So I have made you the presenter. I believe that you can do that now.
Okay, just a minute. Be able to share the presentation here?
You should be able to share your presentation, or maybe sharing your desktop would be a bit faster. There should be a menu there for you, share, and you select what you want to share.
Okay.
There.
Okay, can you see my desktop?
I see it, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Harold, for inviting me to talk about transparency tools that we used for JSR 289. So let's begin. I have a few slides here, and then we can go through the tool we used for transparency purposes. So the JSR 289 specification dealt with SIP servlet specification version 1.1. And the idea was to enhance the existing SIP servlet specification, which is version 1.0, with new requirements determined by the industry. The version 1.0 specification was released in March 2003, and there had been no updates to that. So BEA started leading this specification, and eventually BEA was acquired by Oracle. So the spec completed is basically completed and now led by Oracle. The SIP servlet standard, if you're not aware, it defines a container-based approach for building and deploying SIP applications, which are nothing but converged communication applications which use the SIP protocol underneath. Now, for JSR 289, it was a very popular JSR. 24 companies participated, and the expert group consisted of 34 members. Some of the major players were Oracle, IBM, and there were AT&T, Ericsson, Telecordia, Sun, etc. So you can see that the members consisted of both the vendors as well as the telco operators. We started with discussing over 90 functional requirements for 289, and the details can be found from the GCP page. As per the timeline for the JSR, we started in Jan 2006, and the final release happened just recently in August 2008. And there was the milestones, we tracked the milestones very closely after the public review stage. That is, after Jan 2008, we were able to go through the milestone releases very quickly and in a timely fashion and get the spec completed in August of 2008. And one of the reasons it helped us was having this collaborative tool to get all the members on board and agree to things. With regards to transparency, we had transparency at two levels, transparency with the developer community and transparency within the expert group. For transparency within the developer community, we started a public mailing list called the SIP servlets at googlegroups.com. It was a forum to discuss SIP servlet technology in general, but specifically the SIP servlet specification version 1.1 or JSR 289. This was basically to collect feedback from the developer community, so the expert group could be aware of the use cases that the developer community brings in. It could provide clarifications to the spec and API to the developer community, discuss design decisions, etc. In general, it was fostering open communication between the SIP servlets developer community and the expert groups. some facts. So the whole mailing, the forum is archived at the particular site, so you can go and search for discussions and issues and so on. The spec leads published resolved issues on Google Groups itself, so the community could see that what are open issues and which of them have been resolved and so on. The current membership of this Google group is 223 members, and it is still active, and we do get posts about like 4 to 5 a week, even after the final release. So I'll just step into and show you the Google group that we're in. We have it here. It's archived. You can see a mail was received at 2 o'clock in the morning today. So it's pretty much active. There are 223 members in all, and we are publishing the issues being discussed right here. So the community could track what the expert group is discussing, which issues are open and which ones are closed.
So this issue tracker is built into Google Groups?
No, so this is just a page on Google Groups. So the issue tracker is the next tool that I will get into, but we used to take the output from that tool and just paste it in here.
Oh, okay. So this is just like a text file that you maintain.
Yeah, it's just an HTML file which gives a list of issues being discussed. We'll jump back into the presentation. The next part of the transparency was to do with transparency within the expert group. And for this, we hosted a public website called 289eg.org. That stands for 289expertgroup.org. And this public website hosted a collaborative software called CodeBeamer from a company called Intland Software. It's based in Germany. The site is intland.com. And what CodeBeamer does is it provides a platform that unites people from distributed development teams to provide a more collaborative and transparent and productive environment. In this particular spec, we used it for the following reasons: to empower the expert group members so that they can file new issues and new tasks. They could track issue progress and resolutions. That is basically how the spec leads have resolved a particular task or issue. And it could also be used to collaborate on proposals using wikis. So there was free communication between the expert group members. It also empowered the spec leads us to efficiently manage reported issues. I mean, you can imagine with such a large expert group as well as the developer community on the Google Groups, we used to have a lot of emails, and managing that was growing really cumbersome for the spec leads. And it was really important that we didn't drop the ball on any particular issue or task. And this particular tool did help us doing that. So the tool also let us capture discussions related to issues within the tracking system. It also let us disperse information easily to the expert group members. So instead of mailing again and again about how a particular task was resolved, each expert group member could just log on to the site and look at which task is open or which is closed, and if it's closed, how it was resolved, with what change, if there is an API change, what change was made, and so on. Overall, it let the spec leads track pending work and hence better estimate milestone releases, because we knew exactly how many issues we are going to handle for the next release, and once they were done, we used to have the next milestone.
So this is a great idea, but my question is, who pays for the license for this CodeBeamer software?
Excellent question. So we had management approval for this from within BEA and now within Oracle. So 289EJ.org, the hosting fees are paid by our company. But regarding the software, Intland Software was gracious enough to give us free evaluation licenses for this. And they were really helpful. I mean, whenever the evaluation licenses expired, they used to give new ones. That was really great. We convinced them that this is for a non-profit purpose, and it's for spec development and so on. And they were really gracious enough to hand over the licenses. In fact, if GCP could work with Intland and make such a tool available to the community, that would be really great.
Yeah.
So let me, yeah, go ahead. Any questions?
Well, I was just, we have a similar need. This is Ed from the JSF group, and one thing I don't see on here is that a hosted chat room, is that something that anyone else would think would be useful? Have a room where all the expert group members could be and just, have a text chat? All right. I just wondered if the Intland also offered that.
Yeah. They may have. I mean, again, we used only the issue trackers and the wikis from the software, and they may be having a chatting a feature too, but I'm not sure. However, like in our expert group, some of the very active expert group members, we did exchange our, Yahoo Messenger IDs or Windows Messenger IDs, and we used to chat with them. Okay, so that's the end of the presentation, and I'll jump into the a small demo to demo this collaborative tool that we were using. So 289eg.org was our site, and it's protected, and we have accounts for each and every expert group members. So no one other than the expert group members can come into this site. You can have different projects here. So one of our projects is JSR 289. This is the general wiki page, which I'll show you later. First, let's go into the trackers. But I forgot to ask, are you all seeing the demo that is my Mozilla browser?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So this is the page where we used to track tasks and bugs, and as you can see, the tasks are here. There are 4 open tasks, and there have been 135 total tasks. So I'll click on that, and you can see all these tasks that have been filed. Now these tasks were filed not only by us, the spec leads, but the expert group members as well. So if an expert group member felt that a particular portion in the spec needs clarification or is buggy, they can come into this software and file a new issue. So let's go into one of them. For example, here is session invalidation clarification required. This was the first issue assigned to me, filed by Yarek, and so on. So let's go into that. So here is all the fields that you would see in a bug tracking system. Here are the details and then the comments. So in the comments, you have all the details, and as you see, I've closed the issue made with some API changes and updated what were the affected files and so on. So this led to quite a bit of transparency within the expert group. So it captured all the comments from all the members. You can attach files here. So these are a couple of attachments for the presentations I gave on our expert group conference calls. You can associate this issue with other issues, so you know that the two issues are linked, so that you are aware of the related issues. And you can track a history of all the things in here. And you can do so for each and every issue. So this provided is a really good way to know what is the amount of pending work, pending issues remaining. Especially it was very useful after the public review stage, wherein the draft is, the specification draft is in a good shape, and then there are small issues, bugs here and there, which people become aware of as they start implementing the specification. And here you can have like different views into this. So there is an announcement view. So these are some of the issues that we haven't addressed in the spec, but we can address it in the next release. So the expert group is basically aware of the decisions that are made by the spec leads, and that leads to transparency. So this is one part of the software that we use, and the other part is the wiki. So let's go into and view the wiki that we used for some of the proposals. Yeah, so here you can see one of them is a face-to-face meeting we had in El Segundo in California. So that the this that wiki captures all the meeting minutes. And then the second is the pending proposals. So the pending proposals, you can see here, the session invalidation proposal was written in a wiki. In fact, I wrote this, and the expert group members can browse this and make comments, make inline comments, and so on. So each one has editing capabilities into it. So this is one way. The other way, using wiki, is you collaborate for proposals before they are put into the specification draft. Again, administering this site was pretty easy, and that's generally because the software is really well built, and it's easy to maintain this whole stuff. It didn't take a lot of time to maintain this, to provide logins to all our users. And in fact, we were really happy that the expert group members did take up to using the system in finding new issues and using the system to discuss items and so on. So it was really good traction from our expert group as well.
This is Ed. Regarding the issue tracking, did you have any support inside your company, human resources support, for actually managing the issues and prioritizing, or did you have to do all that work yourself?
Yeah, we had to do that work ourselves. Yeah, I mean it wasn't so much work after the public release. I mean we were two of us, so we could easily manage that.
All right,
but it was definitely better than using email and text documents to follow up issues and disburse information about how they were resolved.
Uh-huh.
And again, the chance of getting a task dropped was very less while using this system.
Sure. I was just wondering how much, you know, time was it in terms of the meta work of categorizing, prioritizing, and managing work in the issue tracker. Was that a lot of work to do?
No, the meta work was less, definitely.
All right.
And this also ties into your CVS, so you can basically link your source code, the API code, in here. And the changes that you make to the code can also be visible to the expert community. So it does have a CVS plugin. So yeah, I'll end my presentation here and the demo, and I'll be open for questions. Yeah, here are the number. Here are all the members within our expert group who use the system. Okay, so if there are no questions, I'll turn it over back to Harald.
I have one quick one. Have you been approached by anyone else inside of Oracle that's leading a JSR for access to this? Because I know there are a number of other Oracle-led JSRs.
No, I haven't approached anyone. Nope. But I'm free to share this information, and thanks to Harald, this is a great forum to share this information. And if any one of you want to use such a tool in future, I can definitely give you the contact from Intland, who would lend you the licenses. Though I'm not sure how many times will they be willing to give you free licenses for this. So I would be really, really happy if GC had something like this for all of us, all of the spec leads for all the JSRs.
Okay, well, if there are no further questions, for Mihir specifically. Mihir, maybe you can turn off the desktop sharing.
Sure.
And we can open it up to broader conversation. And thank you, Mihir and Doug, for presenting. At this point, I'll turn off the recording, and you have any further questions, then for each other.